The latest collection from poet Terence Hayes is out today. It's called American Sonnets for My Past and Future Assassin. Actual assassins appear, like the church shooter Dylan Roof or the Ku Klux Klansman who killed Medgar Evers. Then there are the assassinations by a thousand cuts, he writes in one poem. Even the most kind-hearted white woman, dragging herself through traffic with her nails on the wheel, her head in a chamber of black modern American music, may begin, almost carelessly, to breathe N-words. The poems were written during the first 200 days of the Trump presidency. They're political, they're personal. Terence Hayes won the 2010 National Book Award for his collection Lighthead, and he joins us from NPR New York with a look at this latest collection. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you are African American. You're writing about black men being targeted by police or being targeted by young white men. I mentioned Dylan Roof, the church shooter in Charleston. But it's not always clear who you mean by assassin. In one line, you write, "Assassin, you are a mystery to me, I say to my reflection. Sometimes you are beautiful because of your sadness, but you would be more beautiful without your fear." You're talking to your own reflection. Are you one of the assassins?
See, now that's funny because, you know, that I in the poem is kind of a shadow me. So even when you put it to me so directly, I think, no, I'm not anywhere in this book. But of course, I'm everywhere. So, sure, the assassin shifts and changes, and sometimes it's a reflection, sometimes a shadow, sometimes an image on the television. So, yeah, it does shift, it does change, and, you know, it can feel like that sometimes.
Well, why? Because of self-loathing, or you say you'd be more beautiful without your fear. Is it the fear that kills you?
Oh, wow, okay, that's a deep question. Is it self-loathing? That sounds maybe even too one-dimensional. I mean, part of what I'm doing as a poet is always trying to activate that space between the lines. And so I would say it's always hard to kind of settle on one. So self-loathing just seems like maybe a little too straightforward. But self-doubt, uncertainty probably is a bigger, more common notion.
Or fear. Fear.
Sure, all of that.
As you lay out, you know, what you should be fearful of, you know, all the modern-day assassins. And also fear that really hasn't been expressed as much as the American black man would have every right to. And I'm thinking there's a series of poems which you start with the line, "But there never was a black male hysteria." Now, you know, male hysteria was a really debated topic around the turn of the last century. It was post-traumatic stress, but, you know, they didn't have a word for it then. What are you saying in that line, "There never was a black male hysteria"?
There are two things. There's a sort of the truth of the poem's inspiration, which would be rooted in a friend, a fellow poet from many years ago, who said he was working on a collection of poems, African-American male poet, which I thought the title was Black Male Hysteria. Maybe it was just male hysteria, but it never came out. He sort of had some trouble just sort of adjusting to the world as a poet. And so I've thought about him and carried that idea and thought about both the poet in that space, and then, of course, as a black man in that space. So in a simple way, it is me thinking about, well, are we crazy? Like, would the world really be able to endure a true psychotic break from a black man, from women, even any oppressed spirit? And so you think the only reason there hasn't been that kind of critical break is because of one's compassion under the pressure. And so it's sort of like you should be glad.
Right.
You should be glad there's never been any kind of real craziness as a response or as an answer to violence.
Well, this is so great. Let me just make sure I've heard you right. So you, in a very literal sense, your friend never wrote the book that you thought was going to be titled Black Male Hysteria, but there never was a black male hysteria. But
exactly.
I was reading the second meaning, which is either, you know, black men didn't have the luxury, and white America was really spared what
absolutely
really should have happened after the torture.
And both those things are true. I mean, that's often, even the title of the book is always playing with those ideas of paradox and duality, so that it can be love poems for someone trying to kill you, or it could be a very literal male hysteria, black male hysteria, and a very figurative one at the same time.
Well, although I'm sure you know there are scholars who would say, well, there are more than scholars who would say that African-Americans internalized that, couldn't do it outwardly, so they internalized it. You know, a lot of the violence and other things that we've seen.
And also turned it into art, you know, turned it into blues, gospel,
poetry?
Banjo playing, poetry, of course. Yeah, so rap. I think that is sometimes the result. Will you make this pressure into a thing that's useful, or will you make it into a kind of thing that you're going to fight against.
Do you have a piece that you can read for us? None of them have titles. They all have different, you know, they have first lines, and that's how they're in the index. So the title of all of them is the title of the book, American right. Sonnets for My Past and Future Assassin.
Well, you know, what I did with this one was just to write one that kind of explained it. So that way, whenever I'm reading these poems, I try not to talk very much. I just say the title and read it. Mm-hmm. So this would be me setting up the other poems by reading this poem. I lock you in an American sonnet that is part prison, part panic closet, a little room in a house set aflame. I lock you in a form that is part music box, part meat grinder, to separate the song of the bird from the bone. I lock your persona in a dream-inducing sleeper hold while your better selves watch from the bleachers. I make you both Jim and Crow here. As the crow, you undergo a beautiful catharsis trapped one night in the shadows of the gym. As the gym, the feel of crow poop dropping to your floors is not unlike the stars falling from the pep rally posters on your walls. I make you a box of darkness with a bird in its heart. Photas of acoustics, instinct, and metaphor. It is not enough to love you. It is not enough to want you destroyed.
Who's the you?
This is one of the poems that had a kind of Trump-like figure. But when I was working on that poem, I was again saying, yeah, I am an American, and I feel pretty good about that. Every day, even when the country's trying to kill me, I still feel pretty good about being an American. And when I grew up, what I did when I kind of felt this way was try to make stuff. And so I feel like I'm still doing that, just trying to write my way through very strange times.
Well, and we're thinking of things that have happened along the way. You know, a president who equated both sides at a rally that saw white supremacists and Nazis facing off against protesters. And we're seeing more of police shootings of unarmed black men because of social media. What is the drip for you that has created the feeling that you have?
That November of 2016... I live in New York. I live by myself. I get out as a kind of exercise. But I have a family in Pittsburgh, and we all try to get together. So in November for Thanksgiving, we just decided, you know, New York and Pittsburgh were too extreme. So we met in the middle, which was the middle of Pennsylvania. And I just remember encountering people from the middle of Pennsylvania, which is not, you know, it's not an urban center. Mm-hmm. People joke that it's really West Virginia. And there was just this weird kind of, look what we've done, silence. I mean, I went in, I think we all did, you know, black family, as I said, in a place that's not that many black people. We just kind of picked it. And everybody was kind, but even that I thought they might not be felt very different to me, that I had this sudden suspicious, this feeling of any white person I encounter might actually be aggressive. And as I said, they weren't. But even in that quiet, there was still a kind of trouble. And so, again, I feel like a lot of the poems, I'm trying to work out that. Like, even talking about it, I mostly say, well, I kind of wrote poems to try to get at these things that really everybody's still trying to figure out. It's just a sort of perplexing time.
You don't feel safe?
Again,
No, that's too head-on.
Uneasy. Yeah, uneasy is the question. And curious, too. I feel safe enough to write poems, but not safe enough to have my poems be about, you know, landscapes and mountains, not safe enough to say that I can't come to terms with, you know, the real violence that confronts us when we're on the streets. And us is always, you know, it's certainly black men, but I think it's also women, and it's black women, and it's children. I mean, everybody is confronting this certain dynamic, this certain power that just isn't something that you can ignore, is what I would say. So that distraction is where the poems come from. I just had no choice but to write them, because when I get up every day to write, I want to just sort of open my head up, and what I hear is, you know, the sound of America. And so that's what these become.
Some are pretty head on, people who have assassinated blacks or the hope of blacks in Lincoln. And then I want to ask you about the poem I mentioned a little bit of, The Kind-Hearted White Woman, mm-hmm. who she's listening to Jay-Z and, you know, driving along. Before she knows it, she is maybe, as you wrote, carelessly breathing N-words.
Mm-hmm.
Could you pick up there and maybe read the rest of that?
Yes, even the most bespectacled hallucination cruising the lanes of America may find her tongue curls inward, entangling her windpipe, her vents, toes, and pedals when she drives alone. even the most made-up layers of persona in a two- or four-door vehicle sealed in a fountain of bass, and black boys chanting inwards may begin to chant inwardly, softly, before she can catch herself. Of course, after that, what is inward is absorbed. Mm. And I'm saying yes, like if you're in the car and you're listening to Kendrick Lamar and it's good, I have wondered what it is you would be saying. And I would say, well, if you're saying in words, that's okay. But, you know, once they're in you, they are in you. Mm-hmm. And again, like when you ask this question of the assassin and the reflection, I am saying it's not always intentionally violent. Sometimes it's just inconsequentially consequential. So I have a line in one of the poems. It's not the bad people who are brave that I fear. It's the good people who are afraid.
That's Terrence Hayes. His new collection of poems is called American Sonnets for My Past and Future Assassin. Terrence, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And by the way, Terrence is also wrapping up his tenure as poetry editor for the New York Times Magazine. Poet Rita Dove will rotate into that job next month.